your number one station, your official station.
You're listening to The Itch, Rock Matters. My name is Casey.
My name is Dan.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we have part two of our interview with Arya, the drummer from Skinned Red. And we touched about a lot of the things that he had talked about prior. And you can go back and listen to that if you have not. But you know, the great thing is, if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, this part of the interview is just as good. Like, you don't have to listen to the first part of the interview to know what happened or to, you know, to be able to understand exactly what we're talking about in this part of the interview.
It's true. This isn't one of those serials where you have to see every episode in order. I mean, there's some continuity here, but it is okay if you want to hop in wherever you feel like.
We recommend that you do, just because we want more listens and more subscriptions, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to.
And it's a great conversation. It's worth your time.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
If you don't have that much time, just listen to it on double speed. Still is great.
If you want to hear what three almost 40-year-olds sound like when they're fanboying out, that's exactly what it was.
And you know you do.
Yes.
So without further ado, here's part two of our interview with Arya from Skinned Red.
So that leads down a good question. I was also wondering, because I was just last night actually watching you guys' performance. It was from last year. It was in Germany, this massive festival.
Oh, cool.
Was it called Rockpalast or something like that?
I know the one you mean. It's like, I'm trying to think, you quite like Germany. There's one, not Wacken?
Maybe, yeah.
Proper TV performance type thing. Look like good.
Oh, yeah. Very, very high quality video on YouTube of it. Because, like, I want to see, like, the most recent performance I can find by these guys, just because it's been a minute since you've been here, like you said. And so I'm like, clearly still got it. That was fun. So I guess like kind of a question based off of that is, like, do you have favorite places to play? Obviously, if you remember the Creepy Crawl and the pageant, then you're in your mind, you must have a pretty good log of the places you've been and played.
Do you want in America or do you want all around the world?
Both.
Anywhere, countries or venues, whatever. Yeah.
One thing was really lovely for us, all of us, was to get recognition in the UK, just because that was really important to us. So playing Brixton Academy, which is like the main, basically the biggest venue you get here before an arena, which is like 5,500. That was our biggest. We sold that out in 2011 and then repeatedly gone back. And that's been, to me, probably my favorite place to play because it meant the most, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't necessarily the best gig, but it meant the most. And so that was really cool. I think Germany across the board is awesome for us. They just get it. And on paper, I would never have gone, yeah, I'm going to enjoy playing Germany. But Hamburg, Munich, it's mental. Berlin, anywhere in Germany is always great. I'll tell you where I like playing festivals but not playing gigs is Spain. Festivals in Spain kick ass. They like go mental, but the gigs not so much. I don't know why. I can't tell you. Different energy. But festivals in Spain I love. In America, definitely my favorite place to play is St. Louis. always loved it. But also Florida, actually, because that felt like home. We'd always do really well in Florida. I like Florida, Texas, and California, and St. Louis. And Michigan. Where's the machine shop? Flint. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, Flint.
Yeah. Flint, Michigan. For some reason, that was always wicked for us. And I couldn't tell you why. That was a great one. But Chicago was great as well, actually. Just going down memory lane now. And also Milwaukee. I liked Eagles Ballroom in Milwaukee. That was really good.
The Midwest is pretty good to you guys. That's good to hear. Oh, they're glad to hear that.
Madison, Wisconsin.
Yep.
That was always good. There's loads of them. Just happy to
awesome. That's great to hear. Now it makes us miss having you guys over here even more, because we realize, like, how apparently it's the region works. Like I'm actually in Chicago. These guys are right now.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm like, you're mentioning these. I'm like, yeah, Madison, Milwaukee. These are like 2 hours away from me. Like, I could drive here in no time.
Double Door in Chicago. Great gig, actually.
The Double Door? Oh, yeah.
Wicked gig. And we did the Metro as well in Chicago. Love that.
Those are two of the Yeah, definitely two of the favorites. And Chicago has a lot of music venues. So
we did Aragon Ballroom supporting Korn. Or was it Disturbed? Might have been both. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are quality venues. I'm pretty amazed at your memory of every venue. I feel like if I were in a band for 16 years, I would forget half the places I had played.
It's weird. But... yeah, I actually got a good memory for those for some reason. But then some, you know, you talk to some of the other guys in the band, they'll mention ones that I haven't even thought about, and I'll be like, oh, yeah.
I guess we went there. Like,
exactly.
Are there places like on a bucket list that you guys haven't gotten yet that you would really, really love to?
Yeah, I'd like to do more gigs in Asia.
Ooh,
like we've done India and Japan. I'd love to do some random places like, you know, Thailand, you know, let's play in China, just anywhere that would have us, really. I'd like, you know, the thing about the band is it's the ultimate way to see the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to go to South America more. We had a whole South American tour that got pulled because of, they had those, all the riots was happening in South America last year. We would need to go, and the promoter pulled that entire tour. And then we had, actually, the last 18 months have been like the curse for Skindred. I'm just thinking about it, because we had the Australian tour, which we had to pull out because of the bushfires. And so
we
had South America because pulled out because of the riots. 2 months later, Australia. That was this year.
Wow, yeah.
Australia, it was in January.
Yep.
That was done. And then COVID. So there you go.
And then COVID.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, mental. So I'd like to go back to Australia. Love to go more in Asia. South America, because I know we've done South America, but I'd like to do a few of the places on that list, you know, that we didn't get to do. Never done Brazil, you see. So I'd love to do Brazil.
We had seen, I know you guys had, probably was a couple months ago now, we're trying to do something on the road. I think you had a couple of drive-in shows booked up. And then...
Yeah.
And then... Nope, no dice on those either.
And the Skindred curse.
And the curse
came back. Well, that was so. Do you know Live Nation, the promoters?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Worldwide promoters. So they're our promoter for the UK, and they approached us to do this drive-in tour. It was actually going to be 14 shows across the UK, playing in airfields, which they were going to deck up doing these stuff. And it wasn't just us; it was like a whole load of bands. Whole load of, you know, different artists. We were the rock band, so we were the heavy attraction, if you like. It was us, and you get the guy from Spandau Ballet and Jamie Cullen, a jazz pianist. So different, loads of different things, and each venue would have three showings, they called it. So you would have the lunchtime showing, the 6 o'clock showing, and the 9 o'clock showing. Different act every day, revolving, and we were the 9 o'clock metal.
Yeah,
naturally. And. Exactly. And the week before, they introduced these regional lockdowns in the UK. And so that meant different boroughs, different councils could lock down within 24 hours. And so they were like, we cannot do this for insurance reasons, because if you're playing in Manchester, let's say, tomorrow or in 2 days' time, they could have a local lockdown 24 hours. They didn't. But they could.
Right.
And so they pulled the entire thing. It was so gutting, because we would have done that, because, you know, it would have been weird playing in front of people's cars, but we would have done it. It would have been great fun. You know?
It's clever. I mean,
yeah,
cars and airfields. Like, I will say that for as much as it sucks for bands to not be able to go on tour and stuff right now, I do appreciate some of the creativity that people are showing and trying to figure out ways to do it.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, people have asked us about a live stream constantly, and I'm on the fence, if I'm quite honest, because I think there's something, even if you're in your car, you've got that movement of air with the PA, and because you're allowed to get out of your car, you've got the lights, you've got the stage. On your screen, you know, I could be watching a band now in my slippers. I don't know, it just doesn't feel, to me, live stream doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel special. I don't know.
Doesn't have the same energy.
No. And, you know, I don't know. It's, I don't want to be able to have a conversation when I'm at a gig. I don't want to be like, oh, you know, the dinner's burning, I have to go and do that. Or,
why is everybody looking at me funny? Because I'm doing the helicopter by myself. And
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it works for some artists. Like, if you know, if you had a record out, I saw Seven Dust did one. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Good luck to you, man. You've got a record coming out. You've got to do something.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've seen other bands do it in different places. Like, if you guys have been doing stuff for Crew Relief, if there's a reason, I would do it. That's where I'm at, I guess. If there was something to do, I wouldn't just do it because, just because, you know, well, let's make a buck and like sell out, sell. if there's a reason, yeah, I'm in, but not just because. You know, you want the proper experience or not at all.
It's funny that you mentioned that, actually, because this year, I mean, without being able to go to concerts, like, I've started watching a lot more recorded concerts. And it's one thing that I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old boy. They're both of them boys. And it's one thing that they've gotten into this year is watching these concerts on television. So they have their little play guitars and they're jumping around and having all kinds of energy. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And actually, my oldest, who's 5, he was really sad that he couldn't meet you because you guys are his favorite band to watch on the concerts. Like, it's
no way. Well, that's cool. So, we'll scrub everything I said. See a live stream for us and it'll be for your kids.
I appreciate it. I know that Dean would not be disappointed, that's for sure.
We'll get you back again sometime and we'll have Dean conduct the interview. And
yeah.
Hi Dean, if you end up watching or listening to this.
Oh, he will.
Nice to meet you.
I love that.
It kind of brings me to my next point, though. I know that you guys announced a Showtime tour with Royal Republic throughout the UK next fall, which is, like, I think next September in 2021.
Yeah.
That's got to feel like a super long time away. And it's already been like 18 months since you guys have played. So how is that, the feeling of just not being able to play and knowing that it's going to be another year at least before you kind of start touring again?
I mean, I've heard rumors that it might not even happen then.
Right. Right.
Like, it's so weird. Cause like when all this started, there was, you know, I remember there was a show we were doing in May. This May just gone. They were like, well, we'll put it back till September. And I was like, this September? And like, yeah, it'll be all over then. I'm like, you're mad. You're mad. So it feels weird not to play. It does feel weird. I mean, I'll need some serious rehearsal before I do anything. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You know, when we talked about doing the drive-in shows, that was in August. And we'd already had, you know, 4 or 5 months off, and we put in a day of rehearsal, and I was like, a day, that's it. I think this, you know, then we next meet together, hopefully there's a long period of time where I can, you know, limber up a little bit, you know, get a bit loose.
Yeah.
Do you know what, it'll be fine. I think by that point next year, there has to be some kind of way they can get things going. You know, there has to be.
You sure hope so. I mean, that is what you're seeing people do now. I'm seeing over here, we've got a lot of festivals that are being booked for next year. I think the earliest one I saw was like maybe like May or May, June, July, but that might even be pushing it. I don't know.
Well, my next show officially is in May. My next show officially that's booked is in May. And I know that all our summer festivals we were doing in Europe and UK have been pushed back next to 2021. So they haven't been announced. But I know that's what is going to happen if.
Right. Is that May show a Skindred show, or is that something else that you've been working on?
It's a Skindred show in Ibiza.
Okay. Which I guess kind of brings like a two-part second question. Like, do you have other musical projects beyond Skindred? And if so, like, I guess it piggybacks off the idea of, without being able to really record and tour that much, like, what are you doing during this time? Like, how are you keeping your sanity?
I'll show you.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Okay. You're going to be good.
It's really not that good.
Oh. Nice.
That's what I've been doing. I got really good at Call of Duty.
That's it. Literally killing time.
Yeah, I've got my crew, actually. You know, the other guy that used to be in the band, our old tour manager, who now is with Slipknot, a bunch of us have our little team, and we always meet. Actually, he's doing something else today, but we actually meet at 3 p.m. And we have a happy hour from 3 until 4, where we go and kill people in Verdansk. So I've been having that. It's been good fun. I mean, it's kept me sane because I talk to my friends every day. So it's been good fun.
That's good. That's another one of the reasons that actually why we started this. This gives us an excuse to still communicate and, you know, share that friendship and camaraderie whenever you can't physically, you know, be together too much.
Yeah.
It means
a
lot.
This whole thing, I think, you shouldn't punish yourself for doing anything or not doing things you think you should be doing. Like at the beginning of this, I spoke to Dan, our bass player, and he was like getting really down. He was like, you know, I'm trying to get ideas together. I'm trying to, because he's got this time that he's never had before, you know, all of us, you know, and it's like you're putting pressure on yourself to make the most of the time. I was like, I'll do something. I don't really care. To be brutally honest, I was like, if I get an idea, I'll work on it. If I don't, I'll watch a box set. If I want to go for a walk, I'll go for a walk. If I want to eat a pizza, I'll eat a pizza. Just anything that makes you happy to get it through. I think, you know, it's easy to go dark in these times. And I think do things that make you feel happy. If it's going to the gym and running, then do that. If it's drinking a few beers, do that. Just don't be chill. I mean, I was doing another project with Andy Taylor from Duran Duran, which I played on his album a couple of years ago. And I played, I did some shows with him and a band called Reef in the UK. And I was doing... Well, this year I actually had all their tours I was doing as well. So for me, it was a bit of a, it was a bit of a triple bubble gig for me, which was going to be great. But, you know, things happen.
You went from, you were going to be super busy this year to...
Oh, this is probably going to be the most busy I'd ever been, because at the end of last year, I ended Skindred Festival season and I got a call from Andy going, right, I'm going to, because like I said, I did the album with Andy 2 years ago. And there was never any intentions to do any live stuff. And suddenly he was like, okay, well, he released his single, in the UK. And he went to number one on the rock radio. And he was like, right, I want to do some gigs now. And he was doing this other stuff with his band Reef. And they were good friends of mine. And their drummer left. And it was like, well, why don't you fill in? And I'm like, oh, I'd love to. And it was great. And I literally went from working with Skindred, the last Skindred thing in the summer, to just in rehearsals with Reef the entire of September, October, did a load of shows with them, did Andy's show. 2 days after Andy's show, I flew out to, I think it was Madrid, to meet Skindred and do our European tour for 4 weeks. And then it was Christmas, and then it was like going to be back to doing the same thing again. So, you know, but it's in some ways, I'm very happy because Reef, again, I've got their own guy now, and Andy's, so they were trying to work it through my schedule, which was flattering, but I'm really busy. And now they've got their own job. So I'm happy for them that they've got some, you know, their own dude to do this. Gutted for me because it was good fun. like you talk about the bachelor party every day, it was exactly the same. Just hanging out with your mates, having a few drinks, play some rock and roll. You know?
Yeah, sounds
what
like
more a good time. You want?
It's a good life.
Mate, it's amazing.
Okay, so you got something? I think you had a question.
No.
I had one. I was just going to give it to you first.
No, you go ahead.
So you mentioned before, this is something that I'm always fascinated by personally, of like how you structure an album. And you're talking about like, you know, like front loading, you know, maybe some of, I don't know if you want to call them your strongest or whatever stuff at the top versus spreading stuff out. I'm very curious as to how you guys do that kind of thing when it comes to set lists. Like, what does a set list creation look like, especially for a band with 7 albums and so much to choose from?
You know, I mainly do the sets as well.
Yeah.
So I feel with a set list for me, I really, you know, I got this off Disturbed, if I'm quite honest, because they're good mates of mine. Because I asked them this question years ago when they, you know, because they've got loads of radio hits, haven't they? And it was state specific. It was like, you know, they had 4 or 5 albums out and, you know, they're playing for an hour and a half. You know, like them or hate them, they're a massive band with big songs. And I was said to the same thing, how do you do your set? And they were just like, give the people what they want and indulge yourself for a couple of tracks. And I just think it's the best advice, because it's like, if I'm going to see in my favorite band, I want to see my favorite songs. Now, people will go, yeah, but my favorite song by Metallica is, you know, pulling teeth off the first record. I like, you know, it's like, yeah, good luck to you. But, you know, most people want to hear off the first record, maybe Hit the Lights, or, you know, do you know where I'm going?
Right.
It's
yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah.
There's a majority of people that, because the songs have been singles or radio singles or how or videos have been made, that they're the things that you're going to gravitate to. And so now it would be as simple as literally looking at a band's top 10 Spotify songs and going, right. There's your set list, and there's some other bits in between. Yeah, I think you have to do interesting things to keep yourself interested and maybe do twists on those songs. But, you know, for me, it would be usually the first song would either be coming out the gates with something really strong, not necessarily a big single, but something that sets the tone for the show. So we were opening with Sound the Siren, which was an album track off the, because we were like, this just sets the tone for the show. And then you hit them with Rat Race, you know, which is a big song for us. And we were like, that kind of thing where it was like, okay, do Sound the Siren. I always think, well, the guy who's mixing the sound of the lights have get to do dramatic things in those points with the sound, the lights. The band can feel where their monitors are going because there's lots of gaps in between. I mean, I'm telling you all the secrets to this. Trade now.
We love it, yeah.
But, you know, if there's a problem with Mikey's guitar, Sound the Siren, he's got about 20 seconds where he's not playing guitar, and the first thing, oh, yeah, up, you know, when they do that thing in their ears. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
So there's tactical reasons for it, and hopefully by the time you hit Rat Race, everything's sorted and you're rocking through. But if you think of a light, an album, 10-track album, old school vinyl, start with side A, you hit them hard for first four numbers. Number five is usually a ballad or a softer track, traditionally. Turn it over, hit him hard over the head again to another softer track. And that's the story, because you've got two sides, you've got two sides with a journey on each side. I really like that. I've always liked that ethos of, you know.
Is that in a sense how you guys, how you kind of prefer to lay out you guys' own track listings for albums or for set lists live?
I do exactly the same with the live as I do with the album. Mm. In my, I mean, I'm just one voice. Obviously, some other people will disagree and agree in the band, but
yeah,
personally, it's always been that kind of thing. I like, you know, Skindred's a different kind of band musically, but for me, it's always been a rock band, and yeah. I like rock music, and that's the history of where I come from, and so I like that journey. When you put on, you know, Led Zeppelin 1, you have that massive opener. You know, Good Times, Bad Times comes out of the gates. You know, I've never been one of those bands where the first track is a bit of a sleeper on an album. You know, it's got, you want Welcome to the Jungle. You want, you know, you want the album openers, don't you? You know, some bands will, you know, open with maybe a slower song to ease you in. You know, I don't know. I'd rather hit you over the head straight away, get your attention.
I don't know if Skid Row is the kind of band that, yeah, that doesn't seem like really it would make too much sense for your style.
I don't think it was. I mean, we toyed with the idea in Kill the Power. There was a song called Playing with the Devil, which was a real slow burn. There was talk about it, putting it as the album opener, because it was going to set a completely different tone. And we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and talked about it so much, we turned ourselves off the idea and went, no, we want to open with a big fucking hammer.
So is there a song that you always look forward to playing every set list, or that you want to try to get into every set list?
I love playing Kill the Power, actually. Kill the Power. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to play. And I think if I'm going to play someone now, what's your band sound like? I'll play them Kill the Power. A song.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, because it's got a bit of everything in it. There's so many different styles in there. There's the big heavy riff, there's jungle, drum and bass, hip hop, you know, it's got everything in there. And I'm like, you know, if you don't like this, you're not going to like the rest of it.
Good point.
You know? And I guess back in the early days, nobody would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's great for Kill the Power, because you're talking about give the people, you know, what they want, and then also, you know, try to indulge yourself a little bit. To where you're now at a point where you have so many singles that, like, if you let it, that'll take up most of your set list right there.
Yeah, 100%.
So you have one like that where it's like, okay, this is a notable single and a personal favorite. So you kind of got the two birds, one stone kind of thing going on with that track.
And I'm a great believer in not playing for too long to a lot of people. I don't want to play for, I don't, you know, I love when I go see, you know, Kiss or Guns N' Roses or Bon Jovi, the big stadium act. Yeah, go on, you know, Bruce Springsteen, play for 3.5 hours. Do what you want. bores my tits off when we do it. We're not that kind of band. And like, stand in the audience and go, this is, I saw Pearl Jam for the first time a couple of years ago. Never seen Pearl Jam. And my wife got us tickets and like, we loved it. It was so good. They finished the set, or what I thought they finished the set. We're like, right, let's get out of here. Got a text from my friends going, they're still playing. They played for another hour and a half. It's too long. Like, we left when we were like, this is cool. And I felt really guilty for leaving because it was like one of my favorite bands and whatever. But with Skindred, you come and see us, we're on a headline show. If it's a club, I'm playing for an hour. A little club, an hour, creepy crawl style, it's an hour, in, bash. Everyone gets sway. You don't want to see me standing in the creepy crawl for 2.5 hours. Because I don't want to be on the stage at the creepy crawl for 2.5 hours.
I don't know if anybody's got the physical energy to keep up with Skindred for 2.5 hours. Like, we'd be, you, this is the kind of band that will wear you out, like, just, which, yeah, in a good way.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the bigger the setting, I think, you know, when we play Brixton Academy, it's an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and a half most. But I think, yeah, you know, that's my thing. It's like, if you can play, you know, 75, 90 minutes, that's a good sort of time to be playing. But if you're, like I say, a small club, in and out, quick, and you'll do these shows in, it's always France, actually. France, we do these festivals in France when we're like the headline act, and we'll play on 75, 90 minutes, and you'll get a knock on the door, like you've come back from your, you know, the gig, and you're in the dressing room about to like get changed. The promoter go, are you going to go back on? And we're like, what do you mean? He goes, you need to play longer. And we're like, what do you mean? Like, more, more. It's like, well, that's the whole point. They want more, so they'll come back. Right. Give them more, you give them more, it all now, you know?
So what's the longest that either Skindred has played, or what's the longest like concert that you've ever seen?
The longest I've played, I played 2 hours on the Reef Tour last year, which was, you know, it was like 22 songs or something like that. And I was like, I had to remember them all. It's harder. When Skindred, I'm on autopilot, so it would have been easier. With Skindred, I think the longest is an hour and a half. But I remember seeing Bon Jovi at Wembley Stadium in 1995. I sound like an old rocker. I am an old rocker. Van Halen was supporting, an Ugly Kid Joe.
All right.
Yeah. I played drums for Ugly Kid Joe, actually, when they supported Alice Cooper over here. Just get that in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they played for 3.5 hours.
Wow.
Oof.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of seeing George Clinton and the Parliament Funkadelics play at a festival, and they played for 5 hours.
5 hours.
Yes. From mid, and no joke, they started their set list at midnight and it went until 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I mean, there's something cool about that. But yeah. I mean, at the same time, I'm like, fucking hell.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It's incredible for this story. This is, I don't know if I would go through it.
I'm just amazed that they started at midnight. They're like, you know, if you need to take a nap for a couple hours in the middle of the show, you can come back. We'll still be going. It's good.
Last summer in Spain, we went on stage. I think it was 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
We went on after the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay.
They were nice. Supposed to finish at 2 a.m., but everything ran late in this festival. We're there just waiting, going, oh, my God, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. We go on and play our set. It was so weird. I mean, they went off, but so weird.
That would be weird. What's the energy like at that kind of thing? I mean, the crowd's still there, feeling it. And
I said the same thing, because we've done these festivals in Spain where we've been on at 2 a.m. before, and it's like, first time we did it, I was like, this is fucking weird. What's going on? We drive in, they are going nuts. they don't start coming to the festivals until about 10 o'clock at night over there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a completely different culture.
Very much. So, we have noise ordinances. Your show is usually going to need to be done by 11 or 12 a lot of places around here.
Do you know what? That's the way I like it. I like you know, there's a, you know, there's a club night afterwards, so the gig has to finish at 10 o'clock. I'm like, yes.
That's awesome. Casey, you got to get in. Casey's been excited about this. He wanted to bring up some holiday stuff real quick. So we can see, yeah. You got the setup going on.
Yeah, you got the setup behind you.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Nice.
Well, my wife's birthday is Halloween, so we try and make it a bit more, you know, I know it's in the States, Halloween is way bigger than it is over here. We're catching it again.
So with the holiday theme, what is your favorite Skin Dread holiday song? You got Vampire Killer or Jungle Ball?
Oh, I think Jungle. Yeah. It's Christmas.
Yeah.
I'll definitely go.
Do you guys put that one in the set around Christmas?
Do you know what? We did for a minute. We haven't done it for a while. We did for a minute, yeah. We recorded that in America, so I think we were doing it in the States for a minute.
Nice.
I'll be honest, that was the fun thing. Like, whenever we first, talked about how we got Nobody and then we got Babylon, like, for the studio and stuff. That was also around the time of file sharing. And so then we went on a hunt. We're like, we're finding every, like, demo and B-side or whatever we could find. We come across, like, those tracks. And we're like, oh, this is great stuff. So I'm pretty sure that Jungle has been on the Itches, like, Christmas playlist.
Oh, yeah.
Every year.
Yeah, we do a Christmas show every year. Well, this year we might not, but...
Well, yeah.
We usually tour every Christmas. We do a Christmas tour in the UK and Europe without fail. And I make our crew wear little Santa hats. and if they don't wear them, they get a penalty. The penalty is they have to chug Jägermeister. Yeah. These are the things I learned from being on tour in America. When some of these American bands, you know, they really like to booze over there, don't you?
Oh yeah,
they do.
No, I'm into it.
So what's a song? What's a song or album that has changed your life?
Probably Queen, Night at the Opera.
Hmm. Yes,
we saw the mug there earlier. So.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. It was always Queen and Guns N' Roses for me growing up. I loved them. Queen before, then Guns N' Roses. Yeah, just obsessed.
Can't go wrong with that selection. There's a reason Queen's one of the biggest bands ever.
Yeah, you know, everyone was what kind of music? You're like stadium rock.
Oh yeah.
So what's a song that you wish you would have written?
Happy birthday.
And make sure you got the copyright on it. There you go. Now you never have to do anything again. You're good for life. For everyone's life, actually.
Not make it be part of the public domain.
Right. No. He's got dibs on that one. How about a song that you're particularly proud that you did write?
I think there's a song on our record called Saying It Now, or Volume. I think that was like a biggie. I think me and Mikey wrote that, and then Benji came in with the lyrics. So being part of that one was good, because I think lyrically that was pretty you know, up there. I think that was a really good one. I think on Roots Rock Riot, Rude Boy for Life, actually. Hmm. I think I was really proud of that because it was actually the second song we ever wrote as a band.
Oh, wow.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, so that was a good one. The first one we ever wrote as a band didn't end up on anything. The second one did, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really enjoyed the acoustic version of Saying It Now on Big Tings.
Oh, good, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how it probably should have been to begin with. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because I think when we wrote the music, we didn't know you know, you never know what Benji's going to be doing. And he just came in straight away with this idea. And it was like, it's funny because, you know, traditionally with a ballad, all those kinds of things, they start off how it ended up on Big Tings. You know, not like, you know, it was quite Faith No More-y, Foo Fighter-y. That's the way Saying It Now started. You know, it was quite, you know, alternative rock, I guess. It wasn't, you know, really pulling too many punches. And then, you know, it had this new reimagined way when we were playing it. I think they were doing something in a radio station, actually, and it was like, well, that song translated really well to acoustic. So.
What would be your dream collaboration for Skin Dread? Like, who would you like to work with?
Who would I like to work with? Me, personally, or with the band? I mean, you know, because I can be stupid, and I, you know.
Both.
I think it's a shame Prince is not around. He would have been at the top of the list for Skin Dread.
Yeah.
I think everyone... things that everyone would agree on, you know. I think he'd be well up there. I think from a rock standpoint, I'm trying to think, love to do something with Brian Johnson from AC/DC. Nice. You know, get him on there. There's so many, aren't there? I mean, you could do like a, there's like a dancehall artist called Coffee. She's really cool at the moment, isn't she? She'd be great to get on the track. Then you've got people that aren't around, like Freddie. He would have been great. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You can go down whichever route. I mean, there's so many people. I think when we did the thing with Jacoby from Papa Roach, the reason it was so much fun is because he is so much fun and we're friends.
Yeah.
So there's something special about that with people you know, working with people. You know what I mean? Networking with people you know. So someone we know, I'm just trying to think. I know this is a random one. I'd always like to do something with Jesse from Killswitch Engage. I know that's random, but I think he's got a great voice and I know he loves reggae. So
nice.
And I know we'd have a good time because we're all mates with him.
We'll hope for that on a future album because that sounds like a perfect pairing right there.
Yeah, and I think he'd be great. Like I said, work with someone you know will be fun, and then you can work with your heroes.
Yeah.
What about a song you would want to cover with Skindred?
Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick by Ian Dury.
Okay.
I don't know that one, but I'm glad that it came to you quickly. He'd been thinking about that one for a while.
I spoke about it the other day with the band, actually.
Because that might actually happen soon. That's, there we go.
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping with this line of questioning. We can inspire some things that we'll later on hear. We'll be like, oh, snap, I think we had a role in that. Like, that would be...
Well, it would be fitting, wouldn't it, considering we've been together for so long?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So I know over the last couple of albums, you guys have gotten to record at a couple of pretty legendary studios as well. Is there anything on that bucket list that's left? Is there a place you want to, you know, post-COVID, I guess, go actually lay down tracks?
Shame Sound City's not around the way it was. That would have been legendary to do.
Hmm.
Shame. I mean, they're more legendary in the States, but like somewhere like the Power Station in New York, you know, that would have been really cool. In the UK, I mean, it was always Real World, which was Wicked, which is Peter Gabriel's studio. That's where we did Big Things.
Mm-hmm.
And we did Big Things in Real World and Rockfield. And Rockfield is where they did Night at the Opera. It's where Queen...
That had to be...
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times, and that place is just incredible. I used to think when bands said, you know, when these questions would be asked to bands, and they'd be like, you know, how was it recording in so-and-so or writing in so-and-so? I used to think, fuck's sake, you just get on with it and do it, don't you? It doesn't matter where you do it or where it's happening. But I completely changed my mind. When you start working in legendary places, you start getting different influences and you feel a different way. You know, when you know that people you've respected have been in the same room as you, using the same equipment, doing whatever, you're like, it adds gravitas, I guess, to everything.
It's like hallowed ground you're kind of on there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you up your game and you start performing better. You know what I mean? Different conversations. Yeah. Happen, different influences happen, and you know, especially like that in Real World. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a massive complex, and we had the whole place to ourselves. And it's amazing.
So, what would you say is your dream tour? Like, who would you be taking on the road, or who would be headliner opening for Skindred?
Who would be opening for Skindred?
Or headlining, whichever you want to do.
I've always, do you know what? It's a weird, it's, I've always wanted a tour with Limp Bizkit.
Hey,
we've actually mentioned them on our show a lot more than is relevant. But yeah, I used to be a huge fan of them.
I love Limp Bizkit, and we do festivals with them all the time in the UK and Europe, and we've never toured with them. And I just know that their audience always loves us, and so I know it'd be great fun. Just it would be really fun.
And they're a phenomenal live band too. I'll give them that credit.
And they have this new bar on stage. Like a tiki bar. They have it on Wes Borland's side. Last time we played with them in Germany, no, it was Austria last year. They were, you know, they gave us all these passes so we can stand at the bar and the tech bring you drinks while you're watching the band. I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, I'm talking myself into it more and more.
It'd be great to see that much, you know, a stage presence in one tour. You know,
mate, because yeah. I know my favorite band to tour with. And I've mentioned them already, is Disturbed. They're best friends in a band. They're so cool. Proper gents. took care of us so well. Their audience really respond to us, and you know, I couldn't give them more praise. So
awesome.
Yeah, they're lovely people.
What would you be doing if you were not in a band for a career?
Trying to be in a band. Weird question, because I don't know any different, really. So
yeah,
you know, I'd like to, maybe a chef.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe a chef. Always fancied being a chef. Just a bit too lazy, and I don't like lots of ingredients. It's obviously fussy.
I feel you. Know?
Yeah. Are you fussy?
Yeah. No. Yeah, you mentioned that you started playing at 16, you said?
Touring, yeah. I started playing drums when I was 12.
Okay. So what were those kind of bands that you were in before you hooked up with Skindred?
Yeah, I was in metal and rock bands, you know.
Okay.
We toured toured the UK. We actually supported Nonpoint on their UK tour, funny enough. So it was all
okay.
Pretty weird. When Nonpoint first came to the UK, my old band supported them on their UK tour. So I knew those guys before they, you know, before Skindred, which was nice when we met up with Nonpoint. I go, oh, hello, I remember you. and their crew again. I was doing that tour, just domestically. It was never internationally. It was just trying my best to get out there, really.
Yeah.
You know, we shared management with Skindred. Beginning Dub War, Benji's old band. So it happened just through, I mean, the UK music scene, especially in rock and metal, is this big. And it was that big in the 90s. Everyone knew everyone, you know, and it wasn't as popular as it is now over here. You know, the British bands, they were more indie rock, you know, metal, it really wasn't happening over here. And, you know, we thought it was going to happen for us.
Yeah,
you know, but you know, it, when you're doing one style like that, my influences, like I say, were Queen, Guns N' Roses, but then my guitar player in the band at the time, his favorite, you know, he was a thrasher, he loved the Big Four, you know, and that's how I got into that kind of music, like the thrash stuff. And so you had like this weird rock hybrid metal band doing the rounds in the UK. So
who, I mean, I guess because it is a little bit different over there, I'm curious if like our perception in the States is off or not. Like, who would you say are, like, right now the big rock metal bands in the UK? Like, who really seems to be having the most buzz?
Oh, I'd say without doubt, Bring Me the Horizon.
Really? Yeah.
I think they're the big boys of the metal, but they've now changed, haven't they? So they're now like a pop metal thing. Sorry, that's my the hood. I say Bring Me the Horizon. They just did that track with Youngblood, which is a pure pop rock track, which I think is cool. Trying to think. They're on the top level. They're an arena band over here now.
Okay.
That's where they go. I mean, and you come and see a metal show in the UK. I'm trying to think of UK bands. A band called Don Broco, who are another UK band who do Wembley Arena. But they're not metal, you know. They all straddle the pop rock.
Yeah,
yeah.
The reason they're at the arenas is because they've now done pop. So I'm just trying to think of, you know, Slipknot will do arenas in the UK, but from a British band, you know, you really. Okay, put it like this: when we played the Download Festival last year, so Download's the biggest rock festival in the UK.
Yeah.
Headline, I think, was basically American bands and Def Leppard. So over the 3 days, we were the only British band on the main stage for 3 days.
Oh, wow.
It was all American, Max. Huh. And we were high up. It was us, Trivium. Who the fuck was it? Slipknot, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Slipknot Day. And we were like, well, we're the highest band up here. We have like our, you know, our audience. To get to the next bit, you're going down the Bring Me route. That's what we were talking about earlier. I've got Brixton Academy, and I've got the O2 Arena and Wembley Arena. You know, if we change direction maybe and wrote more things like that, then it may happen for us. I don't really want to do that. Happy where we are. If things happen, if people come to us, that's always how you want it to be. But without doubt, Bring Me the Horizon are the biggest metal rock band. Oh, Royal Blood. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Royal Blood. I just forgot because they're heavy rock.
Yeah, we'll put them in there for sure.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting point you brought up the idea of wanting to. I mean, the oversimplified way of saying it is not sell out, even though I think that definitely isn't the accurate way. I feel like you guys have a really good balance of what it sounds like anyway, of remaining true to what you want to sound like, but also having some definitely a degree of accessibility without it sounding, you know, overproduced or, you know, pandering or anything like that.
Well, that's the whole point of what I was saying earlier. I think it's harder to write a pop song than people think. Mm-hmm. So I don't take anything away from Bring Me Horizon. That's a career choice that they're going down musically.
Yeah.
If you compare Babylon with Big Things, they're vastly different.
Yeah.
And there's each album along the way has gotten to that point, and Bring Me do exactly the same thing. If you listen, I don't know the names of their records, but I know one's called Sepaternal, and that was really heavy. But
yeah,
their first record was death metal.
Right.
And so there's a progression there too. And that, you know, those progressions are natural. And I think as long as the band is being true and doing what they want to do, then people will move to them. They've obviously found a niche and gone, we've got a great way of writing pop hooks and making them heavy. That's accessible. That's working for us. With us, it's going, okay, well, our hooks are in this music. But, you know, you just, everyone's trying at the end of the day, aren't they?
Yeah.
And sellout's a weird one because it's like I said, I think it's harder than people think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're only selling out when you fuck it up.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
As I say, that's an oversimplified way of saying it. It really isn't about that, but, and I'm sure that, you know, for a band like you and for a band like them, that sort of slow transition of sounds is what keeps you into it and keeps it fresh. So any band I've heard of talks about, we don't want to make the same record 8 times, and so that transition over time is useful, I think, in a band's evolution.
I like the journey as well. I like it when you listen to bands and you go on the journey with them. You know? And it's exciting. I think if you had 8 records all the same, it'd be fucking boring. That's why I'm in a band that has about 8 genres in each song. So
yeah,
exactly.
I think that's another reason why we gravitated towards Skindred so much is because we're like, okay, what are like the styles that we kind of want to play on this show? And we're like, oh, it's all the styles that Skindred meshes into one band. Like, you pretty much covered the whole umbrella of what we were about. So we're like, well, I guess we're covered right now. We'll just go with them.
That's great.
All right, we got one more, and then we can let you go in a minute here.
So we call our podcast Rock Matters because we want to explore the different meanings rock music has in people's lives. So our final question is to you: why does rock matter to you?
For me, it's all I've ever known, really. So it's a deeper question. I wouldn't trivialize it because it means everything to me. So, you know, I grew up listening to rock music, started playing the drums based on listening to music. It's forged every, you know, relationship I've had in my life, you know. And my wife works in the music industry.
Hmm.
You know? My friends are in bands. My friends are in, you know, in rock, rock music. She works in the rock music. Yeah, that's why rock matters. But definitely forged my personality over the years and who I am as a person. So I think it's probably quite a tribal thing. I think when you meet another rocker, there's that instant like, oh, I see the t-shirt. Nice, we're going to be friends. there's that thing, isn't it? It's like the head nod, isn't it? You know, it's like rock is definitely a gang and a community. That's why, going back to what we were saying earlier, people's misconceptions of it being, you know, oh, there's, you know, it's a predominantly white music, but the audience may be, but they're accepting of other artists of ethnicity, aren't they?
Yes. You know,
it's never really discussed as much as it's becoming more apparent now, but rock is definitely a community that takes care of its own. You know? When you go to when you go to Download Festival in the UK, it's all peace and love. It's not, you know, it's not rowdy. It's rowdy watching the bands, but there's no vibes between people. People are there getting on. I think that's the community aspect of it. Different vibes clash usually when different tribes clash. So that's what happens at a lot of festivals coming together. You know, it should all be, you know, rock's always been a great community, and that's where I felt at home. So
yeah,
awesome.
Thank you.
That's a great answer. Thank you. Well, we really appreciate having you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're a pleasure to talk to. Your management is a pleasure to talk to. I don't know.
Yeah.
You want to?
Well, I won't tell them that.
Yeah, I mean.
It really means a lot to us. You have no idea. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's much appreciated. And good luck with everything. And let me know if you need anything else in the future.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Arya. You know, enjoy your day. And
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for everything.
Pleasure. Bye, mate.
So that wraps up part two of our conversation with Arya from Skindred. And you guys, after having that chat, it really drives home one point to me. We got to figure out how to get these guys back in the States at some point, somehow.
Yeah, I agree. It's been really, really long time. And we had kind of talked about that throughout the conversation that, you know, I when they first started out, I had seen these guys real quick three times within like a year and a half, and then nothing for years. And I miss seeing them there. I mean, you know, we talked about it in the conversation, like the only way I can see them live is on, you know, YouTube videos and things like that.
And as we discussed in that conversation, that just doesn't cut it. We need these boys back in the States more than every 5 years. Their live show is too good. Let me just tell you that whenever we mention that they had received awards as the best live band in the UK, that was legitimate. Like, magazines have declared them that in the past, and it's with good reason.
That it is.
Agreed.
There's so much energy. There's a lot of fun. There's so many mixing of styles. You get that part of the show where everybody flings their shirt around in the air. That's good times. No spoilers on that one, I guess. So if you are in the UK, obviously, as we discussed, nobody's really still touring a whole lot yet. But hey, you know, you got almost a year to get ready for Skindred and Royal Republic to move all over the countries there and give you some great live shows. And in the meantime, we're really going to hope that whatever they're working on comes out sooner than later, because we really can't get enough of new music from this band. And as much as we legitimately love Big Tings, it's been a couple of years now, so we're ready for more.
Yeah, we have space on our top 20 list, so they definitely need to make another album.
Yeah, they're always welcome on that list.
usually number 1 through 3 is right where they seem to fit.
Now the itch is tipping our hand about favoritism right now. Have they ever had an album that didn't at least crack the top 10 that we, since we've done that?
Not the top 10. No, I think that every one of them has been in the top 10. I will say, I think there was one that didn't crack the top 5.
Shark Bites and Dog Fights.
Well, that one, I don't think we were doing, I don't think we were doing album reviews when that came out, to be honest.
That could be. It could be.
But no, I was actually thinking it was Kill the Power.
Oh, that's disappointing. I was just listening to that album earlier today,
it's top 10, but I know it was not as high as Volume or Big Tings or Union Black, for that matter.
So it's really cool. It's something that I noticed in talking to him. I was just making internal observations then and listening to some of their music later. We were enamored with Nobody and the album Babylon when it came out. And that was 2004 or something. Yep. And what's really interesting is, even though they haven't really been in the U.S. hardly at all for most of a decade, really, their albums in the past 10 years seem to be overall probably, I would say their stuff in this like second half of their career, we'll start with Union Black, is probably stronger than the first half. So they're this band that, as we mentioned about a couple others, in many ways seems to be improving and diversifying their sound even more with age. So it's kind of cool that you can be like, hey, this band's been around for 16 years, and also they have a bright future.
Yeah, and he had kind of mentioned that in the conversation about how their progression was constantly going up, and they continuously want to get better. And there's no doubt that they're doing that.
Yeah, so maybe they'll go that route of Bring Me the Horizon and have a little bit of a breakout. I shouldn't say a little bit, as he mentioned in the discussion, Bring Me the Horizon is huge. So hey, shout out to Bring Me the Horizon. Take Skindred on tour with you next time you get the chance. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah, sneak them into the States, please.
Sneak them into the States.
You know, that was actually one thing that kind of surprised me, was to hear how big of a band that has become in the UK. I mean, I know that, you know, they're pretty big around the States, but like, they kind of are a niche band in the States, in my opinion. Like, you just don't hear them everywhere, you know, on like the stations and the streaming apps, is what I was trying to say.
It's really interesting to hear about bands who, how do you say it? How the popularity and notoriety of a band can shift from one region to another. So we even discussed a number of episodes back when we were talking about Bush, how they were really, despite being British, were never really that big of a deal in the UK, but were massive in the mid late 90s in the United States. And so it's just I'm fascinated by hearing how that can change from location to location, like the perception of an artist.
Yeah, just the progression or regression in certain cases.
Yeah. And so we're hoping that Skindred has a continued long and bright future, both in the UK and here in the US. And we said it multiple times during the interview, but we are very appreciative and grateful to Aria for speaking with us. And so, Aria, if you are listening to yourself, thanks again. We loved it.
Yeah, we hope to be part of the reason why Skindred continues to get more and more popular through the US. You know, if we have anything to say about it, we will do our best.
We're going to keep pushing them. We still love them. They mean a lot to us. We've grown up together, and we're going to grow old together. So
that's right. We're friends for life.
We're friends for life now. We're bonded.
So I hope you enjoyed listening and meeting Aria as much as we did. It was surreal. Like I said, I just cannot tell you how much it meant. It was just completely unreal being able to meet somebody that you idolize and have admired for 16 years or so. So cannot thank Aria enough for that. Thank you very much for listening and supporting our show. And honestly, if you haven't realized that, you're supporting our dream at the same time. So thank you very much. We do appreciate all the support, all the love that we get. Please let your friends know about it, especially if they're a Skindred fan or if they don't know who Skindred is. Maybe you need to tell them about Skindred.
And Rock Matters. Tell them about both of us.
I was getting to that point next. Yeah, you know, obviously.
I mean, I'm here to promote us. They've got their own venues to promote themselves. I mean.
Yeah, obviously. Once you're done talking about Skindred, then tell them how awesome the Itch Rock Matters is.
There you go.
It is. We put our heart and soul into this, and we, you know, we're hoping to make it worth your time. That's all we try to do. So thank you very much for listening. This is the Itch Rock Matters. My name is Dan.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Aaron.
And until next time, rock on.
If you enjoyed what you heard in this episode, please subscribe and tell a friend about the show.
We've got plenty of links in the show notes to continue the conversation, including the episode's playlist.
And you can interact with us on Twitter, Facebook, or through Gmail, all at Itch Rocks, ITCHROCKS.